From our nation's capital, this is Naps Chat.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you.
Hi, this is Bob Levy, the Director of Legislative and Political Affairs for the National Association of Postal Supervisors, and welcome to this week's edition of Naps Chat. Today is our special July 4th edition of Naps Chat. As you might recall, last year we spent July 4th on Independence Avenue and Constitution Avenue with spectators for the National Independence Day Parade. This year we have the honor of having Steve Kokesberger, a postal historian, join us, and we are going to be talking about the history of the Postal Service, because the Postal Service later this month will be celebrating its 255th birthday. In fact, it is 1 year older than the founding of our nation, and we're celebrating the 254th birthday of this country on Saturday. So welcome to Naps Chat, Steve. We've known each other for some 20 years. You're a former postmaster from Pennsylvania. You're doing your graduate degree on American history, and you're focusing on the Postal Service, correct?
That's right, Bob. Thanks for having me on. It's always good to talk to you about postal history.
Let me start with the history of the postal operation. Doesn't start with the founding of our republic. In fact, it goes back, interestingly enough, to biblical times. The Persians had a very sophisticated postal system, as did the Egyptians and the Romans. But primarily, they carried royal mail and royal messages, and they used the king's roads to convey mail. But in our country, we sort of inherited directly from the British post. Can you explain the difference between the royal post, which predated our American postal system, and the development of our postal system?
Well, the royal mail, as the name implies, was primarily for the use of the crown and royalty. It was gradually opened up for the use of the public, and it was used by business people. But the postage was fairly expensive. So when the British colonized North America, there was a need for a postal service, primarily to exchange communications back to the mother country. So we find in the early period, most of the mail is going between Boston and back to London, or to Charleston, South Carolina, New York, Philadelphia. There's very little mail traveling from cities in the colonies, because basically they were really different nations. New England was much different than South Carolina or in Pennsylvania or New York. These are all, they had little to talk about in common, at least in the beginning.
So there wasn't the concept prior to the establishment of the post office as we know it as binding the nation together.
Well, that evolved over time. When the Dutch controlled the colony of New Amsterdam, there was no continuous British presence. You'd go from New England, but then you would have to go through Dutch territory. When the Dutch turned over New Amsterdam and it became New York, then there was need for communication, because these were all basically British subjects and they were facing common challenges. And time leading up to the Revolution, there was increasing unhappiness with the way the crown was managing or ruling over the their colonies in North America.
The unhappiness of the colonists with the British postal system resulted in Ben Franklin. Well, Ben Franklin was the deputy postmaster of North America prior to the Revolution. He was fired from that job, wasn't he?
Yeah, Benjamin Franklin had, he started as the postmaster of Philadelphia. He was also the publisher of the Pennsylvania Gazette. It was very common for newspaper publishers to also be the postmasters, because it was one way they could get their newspapers delivered reliably and hopefully inexpensively. So after 40 years in the Postal Service, he was dismissed because there was a lot of trouble going on in the colonies. And even though Franklin had been in London for the better part of a decade, he was accused of stirring things up, I guess would be one way they would say it. So he was dismissed from the Crown as his position as Deputy Postmaster General for North America. And he returned to Philadelphia just in the nick of time, as it turns out.
So he was involved in setting up what is known as the Constitutional Post, which was a competitor to the Royal Post.
Actually, the groundwork for the Constitutional Post was done by a fellow named William Goddard, who was also a newspaper publisher. Franklin was still in London. Goddard took it upon himself to travel to all the colonies, at least the northern colonies, and he had them actually subscribe to this Constitutional Post. He called it constitutional because he considered the royal mail to be unconstitutional in the sense that it was subject to censorship. The postage was so expensive, it was considered a form of taxation. And it was, in that way, it was viewed by patriots as supporting the crown. So Franklin arrived after Goddard had already set up this Constitutional Post. He had several dozen post offices all along the East Coast that were functioning and competing with the Royal Mail. So in some cities, you actually had the King's Post Office, and then you had the Constitutional Post Office, which, of course, was illegal, but it showed how popular sentiment can prevent the law from being enforced.
Now, the existence of the Constitutional Post as the post office of the American patriots really sort of skimmed off a lot of revenue that would have gone to the Royal Post, causing some serious financial problems for the Royal Post.
Yeah, the Royal Mail was never expected to be a moneymaker, but when they made Franklin the Deputy Postmaster General for the King's Mail, he actually was able to turn a profit. And when the folks in London saw that there was money to be made, they wanted to make more. What was your question again?
The competition of the two posts caused some serious financial problems to the King's Post.
Yes, there are records showing that the Royal Postmaster New York had to cancel he wasn't making enough money even to pay the post rider to take the mail to Boston, so they canceled those routes. As public sentiment turned against all things royal, people stopped using the Royal Mail. Basically, the revenue dried up, and they shut down operations on Christmas Day in 1775.
And during the Revolutionary War and prior to the Revolutionary War, the American patriots decided to attack the post roads that where mail was being carried on behalf of the King's Mail.
Post roads, yes. The most famous probably is the Boston Post Road, which ran from New York through New England to Boston. It was also called the King's Road. The British had a powerful presence because of their navy along the coasts. But once you go inland, the patriots sort of ruled the land.
I had heard that because of the attacks on the British postal system, that they had to sort the mail aboard ship rather than have the mail sorted for the colonies on land in like New York or Philadelphia or wherever.
That's correct. Even though they were occupying New York, they didn't feel that the mail was safe to have on the land, so they sorted the mail out on a warship in New York Harbor.
We hear about the so-called stamp tax. Did the colonists believe that the postage that was placed on mail carried within the colonies was a part of this stamp tax?
No, the stamp tax, even though it's called a stamp, it was actually more of an impression. It was a tax charged on paper. So official documents, newspapers, anything. And this paper all had to be imported from England. So this was a way that they could tax the colonists. It wasn't considered an essential item in the sense that it was food or something, but it was a way of limiting communication and also the legal process, legal documents. So the stamp tax had nothing to do with postage. That came later.
You had mentioned that the Constitutional Post was created by Goddard, but he was replaced at some point by Ben Franklin. How did that come about?
Well, in the fall of 1774, Goddard went to the Continental Congress and laid his plan on the table, said, this is working already. If the Congress will support it, we will have an excellent alternative to the royal, to the King's mail. The Congress set that aside at the time because they had a lot of other things they were dealing with. But then in April of 1775, something happened that completely changed their outlook. It was the Battle of Lexington and Concord. At that point, it was understood that we were at war with Britain, and the only way we could communicate was by having an effective postal service. At that time, they revisited Goddard's plan, and a committee was established to come up with the best way of Congress adopting that constitutional post. And the committee returned in the report, and on July 26, 1775, they appointed a postmaster general to hold office in Philadelphia, a salary of $1,000 for himself and $340 for a secretary and controller. And they named Benjamin Franklin to that position. Goddard was not completely pleased with that. He thought that he had done all the work. He should be named the postmaster general. But understanding that Franklin was probably the most popular citizen alive at that time, he would have been happy to take second place as the deputy or controller. Instead, Franklin gave that to his son-in-law, Richard Bache. Goddard was offered a position as surveyor, which today we would call a postal inspector. And he is recognized as the first postal inspector.
Wow. So it is possible if the Continental Congress decided otherwise, we would have to say the first postmaster general was a gentleman named William Goddard rather than Benjamin Franklin, which would have changed American history, no doubt.
Benjamin Franklin is revered for so many things. I don't think the loss of the title of postmaster general would have diminished his standing. On the other hand, Goddard is basically forgotten by all, unless you're deeply into the history of colonial America and the Revolution. You probably never heard of Goddard. The entire Goddard family is fascinating because his father was a postmaster in New London, Connecticut, and they ran a printing business. Goddard himself served as postmaster of Providence, Rhode Island, and Goddard's sister, Mary Catherine Goddard, was the postmaster of Baltimore. She's one of the few women who actually served as a postmaster during the time that Benjamin Franklin was our postmaster general.
I want to move a little bit forward to post-Revolutionary War as our Constitution was being developed. And there was, and I've spoken about this in the past, there was some controversy as to who would be in charge of establishing the post offices and post roads. There was a disagreement between those advocating for George Washington, who believed it was the president's responsibility to create post office and post roads, versus those who argued that it should be Congress's responsibility. And in fact, in Article 1 of our Constitution, which creates the establishment of post office and post roads, it is Congress who has that authority. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, the creation of the Constitution is one of the most amazing group of compromises that ever came along, trying to get the right balance between the three different branches of government. Nothing like that had ever been attempted before, to devise your own constitution. So, of course, Congress wanted control, and they felt like it was their prerogative because they're the closest to the people. The people know when they needed a post office. The chief executive, on the other hand, Washington, felt like it was his prerogative to appoint officers. So they did come up with sort of a compromise on that. The Congress could establish the post offices and the post roads, but the executive could name the postmasters.
And he did so until the Postal Reorganization Act of 1971. So that's a long period of time which the President of the United States was responsible for the appointment of postmasters.
Well, in the early period, the President did not directly appoint postmasters, but through his representative, the Postmaster General. Samuel Osgood was the first Postmaster General to serve under the Constitution. And it was controversial because I just mentioned Mary Catherine Goddard as one of the first women postmasters. Osgood dismissed her and put in a man of his own choice. And she was unhappy. She raised quite a ruckus and had petitions. She even wrote to Washington himself, and his reply, he said basically that he's delegated that to his Postmaster General and he chooses not to interfere. Moving forward in time, we come to Andrew Jackson, and he saw much more possibility in making the Postal Service an arm of his administration. And at that time, the largest post offices were directly appointed by the president, and they were called presidential post offices. And that survived until the administration of Richard Nixon.
We were tracking history, Andrew Jackson and so forth. I want to talk a little about, you know, Postal Service is so much, or the post office is so much part of Americana. And as we go forward in American history from the Revolution to this, let's say, pre-Civil War, people don't know this, but the post office department was very involved in electronic communications and innovations. Can you talk about the relationship between the post office and the telegraph?
It's a fascinating story. The telegraph, as we know it, was developed by Samuel Morse. There were a lot of competitors coming up with devices that could send signals over a distance using wires. Morse's great innovation was his Morse code, which changed every letter to a series of dots and dashes. Morse had trouble getting any funding for his project. He lobbied and lobbied, lobbied. And finally, Congress granted him some money to run an experimental line from Washington to Baltimore. Lots of technical challenges to be overcome. And finally, when it was ready, he transmitted that famous message, "What hath God wrought," from the Capitol to Baltimore. Thereafter, the Postal Service oversaw the telegraph, and Morse was put on the payroll as the superintendent. Morse wasn't really interested in running the telegraph. He wanted to sell it. He thought that Congress should buy it from him and expand it, because he had other interests at that point. While he was stringing his telegraph wires from the Capitol towards Baltimore, he went across a piece of land in Northeast D.C. known as Kendall Green. At that time, the former Postmaster General, Amos Kendall, was living there. And he was very curious about what Morse was up to. Once Morse explained what this was all about, Kendall immediately could understand that this was going to revolutionize communication, and there was a lot of money to be made. Kendall was also an attorney. So after the government passed on buying his telegraph, Morse formed a corporation with Kendall, and they started selling stock. And basically the rest is history. They became two of the wealthiest men alive at the time. The post office was out of the telegraph business, and that's the short version of that story.
Yeah, because the post office has been somewhat innovative. Now, I just found this about you. In your family tree is the 38th Postmaster General of the United States, John Wanamaker, the owner of Wanamaker's Department Store from Pennsylvania. And he was the one who brought rural free delivery to the Postal Service. Although it didn't occur till after he left as Postmaster General, he was pushing for parcel post because of the exorbitant prices charged by express carriers at that time. But he also argued for the post office to be more involved in telephones, because Alexander Graham Bell and other folks were at that time inventing the telephone. And he believed the post office department should be involved in telecommunications.
I think he was seeing what had happened with the telegraph, that the government had developed it, ran it for a while, and then it went into private hands, where it became monopolized by the Western Union, and then the prices got jacked up. Wanamaker was a businessman. He was very innovative in his department stores. He was all about customer service. He was one of the first merchants to actually put prices on the merchandise instead of having to haggle with the sales clerk. So yeah, he thought that the telephone is a new invention, but it's bound to take off. Better that the post office department run the invention instead of letting it get into the hands of plutocrats.
One final question for you, if I can. If our listeners, as they celebrate Independence Day for the United States, if they should come away with one idea about the Postal Service or the Post Office and its relationship with America, the United States of America, what would that be?
The thing I always think of is that there wouldn't be a United States without the Postal Service. It was formed before the country declared independence, and but for the communications that it enabled, there would be no independence.
With that, Steve, I thank you for joining us. There is so much to postal history. Hopefully we can return to it, hopefully before July 4th, 2021. With that,
thank you, Bob.
Everyone have a wonderful Independence Day. Be safe and stay healthy.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you. I'm gonna